Well, what a pleasure to be here, see all of you. What a wonderful group. It's a sellout, it looks to me like, and I'm sure there were people knocking on the door to be here today and to be supportive of WILL. I'm a long-term supporter. I remember in our grain elevator south of Champaign, hearing WILL probably when I was 8, 10 years old, tuning into the commodity markets for getting the updates on radio. And that's the way the pricing was done at my grain elevator. They got on the radio, WILL, and then they go right on the board what their bid was. So that's just a little bit after Noah, okay? So, well, my topic today is to talk a little bit about the animal sector. I know many of you are not involved with the animal sector. You heard, you came here today to really hear about the grain side of things. But it turns out that the animal side of our agriculture is clearly very, very important to us in the grain sector. So as we look at consumption of feed, it's still most important categories. We think about the various categories for corn as an example. If we put the corn consumed for animal production along with the distillers that comes from corn, we are certainly still the biggest single category. And as we think about where we've been in this world of grain agriculture and the world of animal agriculture, you know, if I was to ask you a question, which one of those is bigger in the United States, if you're measuring in terms of dollars of receipts from the farm level sales, would it be the cropping sector or would it be the animal sector? And it turns out, if you go back a number of years, I went back to 1970, and it turns out since 1970, those have been very close to 50-50, that we have this balance in U.S. agriculture between the cropping sector and sales of the cropping sector and sales of the animal sector. Now, again, that's a long time to go back, and what you would guess is, hey, I bet there are times if it has averaged 50-50, I bet there have been times when that got out of balance. And, you know, when you're out of balance, things seem to be maybe really good for one sector, but very difficult for the other sector. So we've come through one of those time periods of where that balance between crops and animals really was weighted in one direction relative to the other. And you know that is coming after the 2006 crop, as we saw much higher grain prices and much higher feed prices. Remember, forage is very important for the animal sector as well. And what we saw was the surge in the receipts from the crop sector really going up sharply. And, of course, the integration is very important between the crop sector and the animal sector in the United States. And that integration is tied through feed and feed cost. So what we saw was with the very high grain and forage prices, feed prices were very high. And in those first few years after 2006, 2007, the animal sector had no way to push on or to transfer those higher feed costs over to the consumer. So what happened was a period of decline, a period when we actually saw available supplies of things like meat, milk, and eggs go down in the United States. Now, it's through that process of reducing the amount of available supply that the prices to the consumer, retail prices, could go higher. So in terms of available supplies, I'll use meat as an example. Available supplies of meat hit the bottom in 2014, last year. And in fact, if we go back to the last of the $2 corn and we look at how much meat production was occurring in the United States on a per capita basis, per person basis, we were producing about 220 pounds of meat per person. The high feed prices caused reductions in that available supply as the animal industries were losing money discouragement, and they saw reduction in available supplies. We reached the bottom of those available supplies last year, 2014, at around 200 pounds. So this was 20 pounds less available meat that we were providing to our consumers in the United States of America. That's about a 10% decline. And the feed prices, high feed prices, were certainly one of those contributors. Another one that was very important was the big drought and extended drought in the southern plains. Think Texas. So there we saw about a 21% reduction in beef cow numbers down in the southern plains over this time period, not just due to high feed and forage prices, but also due to the drought and inability to have grazing for their herds. So this is a really big deal. And we have also decreased the amount of corn consumption, as an example. And there I'm putting corn and distillers' grains together. Now, the good news for the both the animal sector and for the crop sector really hinges on 2014. 2014, we reach minimum supplies available on meat, as an example, for U.S. consumers, and therefore record high prices of all animal species at the farm level. This is combined then, as you well know, with a very good crop in 2013, and then an even better crop in 2014 that really have helped moderate feed prices. So that is a really big deal. We now are back on the side of saying the animal industries are going to go through a multi-year period of recovery. Recovery in rebuilding these supplies for our consumers in this country, rebuilding what we think is going to be an increase in exports of our meat products and our other animal products here in the United States, and that makes the outlook pretty optimistic for the next several years. Let me just think a little bit. I was going to talk a bit about the various species. And so what we've seen then is this financial incentive finally to get the animal industries back to strong profitability in 2014. And what we've seen is a lot of response of that sector saying, if we can get these feed prices moderated, we're interested in using a lot more of the corn, soybean meal, and other feed products that you produce. So we really are in a period of fairly rapid buildup of these animal numbers. And in fact, that increase has surprised us. We have all, as analysts, raised our expectation of production of animal products here this year from where we were at the beginning of the year to now 2 months and 10 days into this year. So that's a really good sign. It's a good sign that we're building that base for more and more animal consumption in terms of the feed products that you produce. That's kind of important because we look around for corn as an example, and we have some sectors that are not very responsive to low prices. Now, this has been a concern to us as we think about what is the impact on this, on the volatility of things like the price of corn. And one of those sectors that's not very responsive to whether prices of corn are low or high would be our use of corn for ethanol. Again, the amount of corn we use for ethanol here in the United States is determined by policy. It's determined by things outside of the marketplace. So whether corn be $7 or corn be $4, we don't see much responsiveness with lower prices to the domestic use of ethanol and the amount of corn for that. Now, there is some response in terms of low corn prices and exports of ethanol. So exports of ethanol have been important. They have some opportunity to grow, and we do have some responsiveness there. Another category that's not very responsive to low corn price getting more use is kind of the industrial uses, high fructose corn syrup, some of the starches and industrial starches. And again, we have a fairly constant demand there. We do not tend to see low prices stimulate more use. So what we are left then is the livestock sector. Low prices are clearly in the process of stimulating more use, and that's something I think we look positively forward to. Not only are we building our usage base for your corn, your soybean meal, and we have done that now in 2015, but we're looking at the 15 crop and saying we're going to continue to build this animal base for usage of the crops that you're producing, and that's positive in the long run. And let me break down a little bit by species here and think about what kind of recovery are we going to get in terms of an animal sector that's really been hit hard. They've cut 10% in terms of per capita consumption here in the United States. How much of that are we going to get back? This first year, in 2015, the current estimates are that we're going to get about 4 of those pounds, of those 20 pounds that we lost, we're going to get 4 to 5 of those pounds back this year. Now, are we going to recover all 20 of those pounds? I guess I'm doubtful that we will, but I think we're going to recover probably 12 to 15 of those 20 pounds. And that's going to be a process of building these animal herds on into next decade. So particularly as we look at the cattle side of things, it takes a long time to build beef production and get beef production increased. So for this year, while we're talking about robust expansion for most of the species, for cattle, we're going to be about unchanged in terms of supply. Back at the first of the year, we thought we'd be down 1 to 2% in beef production. Now it looks like a little bigger buildup, a few more cattle than we'd thought, putting heavier weights on those cattle with your more affordable corn for the cattle feeder. And so we're going to be close to unchanged. But where we're really going to increase, it looks like, is the poultry sector as well as the pork sector. In terms of pork, current estimates are around 5 to 5.5% expansion in pork this year versus last year in production. And in the early going of the year, as we said, 2 months and 10 days into this year, we may be able to push that up another 1 to 2%. We may get 6-7% more pork production this year. Now, what's been driving that? Well, it's some of what happened last year at this time. Last year at this time in the meat sector, the big talk was PED virus in the hogs. And that talk was certainly across the media, and that concern was very large. We had herds reporting near 100% death loss. We had reports of that disease spreading rapidly, and this led some analysts to make predictions that pork production last year in 2014 would be down as much as 20%. Wow, those are huge numbers. If you have that kind of a decrease in production, you're up maybe in the range of 45-50% on prices. And so that's kind of what we saw in the futures market and the cash hog market, just an explosion of prices based upon this uncertainty. Market just didn't know how big those losses were going to be. As it turned out, the production of pork was not down 20%. Take a zero off of that, it was down 2%. So much less loss, really not a very big loss in pork production at all last year. And again, producers compensated some by adding substantial amounts to weights. They had fewer pigs, but they added substantial amounts to weights. So this was a classic example, as we look back on it, of buy the rumor. We run hog prices up to never-before-seen prices, $125, $130 in terms of the lean prices. Around $100 to $105 was the highest we'd ever seen before. So buy the rumor, And then what's the rest of that little statement? Buy the rumor and sell the fact. Sell the fact. So the fact was that pork production was not down a huge amount. It was down modestly. And so then what we saw, the big run-up in February and March a year ago of 2014, and then the collapse of the market as the reality set in late in 2014 and continuing into this year, into early February, we saw the biggest dollar drop in hog prices we'd ever seen before. So really a boom-bust price cycle in terms of the hogs, and by early February this year, we were at not just below year-ago levels, which were record high, we were at five-year lows in terms of hog prices, the lowest we'd ever seen. So this was a radical turnaround in the outlook for the pork profitability. Going from record profitability, we estimate around $53 a head last year of profitability, to what this year now appears to be close to break-even. If we take current prices we've had so far this year and then use futures to project on out. So last year on hogs, we averaged about $75 or $76 on a live weight basis. This year, we're currently projecting something in the range of about 50, futures markets are around $52 or $53 per hundredweight. Now, again, I think that's overly pessimistic, overly bearish at this point. We'll see recovery, I think, back into the mid-50s in terms of the hog prices. So where we're at right now, if you're on the corn side, hogs are really leading the way in terms of bigger increases in numbers. I would say this would be at least one of the fundamental factors that would give us some ideas that we'll see feed use for corn could increase still this marketing year because of especially those high hog numbers. So we're probably going to be up, as I said, maybe 6 to 7% on pork production. Chickens projected up about 4% in terms of production this year. Turkeys up around 6% this year. So put all the meats together. Remember, beef still unchanged. We're about 3 to 3.5% up on meats. Eggs projected up 2% and milk up 3%. So all these are really positive numbers as we go forward. Let me just talk about the cattle situation a little bit. And again, as we said, of that 20 pounds reduction in the amount of meat available per person going back from 07 through 2014, of that 20 pounds, beef is about 11 of those pounds. So beef is doubly affected, not only because the beef sector in the cattle feedlot is the one that uses the most feed, the most corn in particular, and energy in those diets. So the high corn prices and other feed ingredients really did hurt the beef sector in terms of profitability the most. The double whammy, of course, coming from the drought in the southern plains. So what we've seen is the Southern Plains, the area that had to get out of the industry most aggressively, 21% decline in those beef cow numbers from 2007 to 2014, is the one that now is coming back the most rapidly. 600,000 new cows in the Southern Plains as of January 1 this year. The drought is not totally alleviated there, but certainly pasture and range conditions are in much better condition. So what we saw on cattle, last year we averaged $155 finished cattle prices. If you take prices so far this year and project on out a futures estimate, we're around $150. Now again, given unchanged beef supplies, I think we'd guess probably futures markets are a bit depressed right now, like their hog counterparts, and that we'll have some opportunity to see some recovery in these prices as we go forward for the rest of the year. So I think my best guess would be we'll do better than that 150. We'll probably be in the 153, 154, up to about 157. And what that says is not a lot of change from last year. Now, some of you do have brood cows, and those calf prices last year, we averaged around $250 a hundredweight on five 550-pound steer calves. And what about this year? Again, beef supplies, not much changed. We're expecting to see the price of finished cattle fairly close on average to last year. But we're going to have an expectation of lower feed prices this year. So we're going to be at five-year lows on feed prices. And the biggest drop in feed price this year is going to be, it appears, soybean meal. So soybean meal, finally, and it doesn't feel so good for those of us raising soybeans, but the world shortage of soybeans and soybean meal may be finally catching up with this big South American crop coming on now, and then with what at least I will anticipate being maybe 4% more acreage on soybeans. USDA is not there yet, but that'd be my guess, and you'll hear other analysts talk about that. So on these calf prices, we think they won't be a lot different than last year. We could be a little bit lower, say 245, 255, something roughly in that range. Feeder cattle prices averaged 203 last year. Again, we think they're going to be pretty close to that range this year. Now, overall, we've seen a bigger expansion of the animal numbers than what we really had anticipated. Again, I think this is back to the animal sector has been through a difficult time period, a resetting of prices lower for their feed. They are really responding to that. Now, going forward, I think we all are questioning, and whether it's talking about our returns for crop farming or land values or what rents are going to do, obviously kind of where this next five-year price is going to be on corn, soybeans, wheat is very important to all of you in the crop side of the business, but it's clearly very important to the livestock industry as well. You know, there's a growing confidence, and I think this quick expansion we've seen says that the livestock industry really does think that we have entered an era where we're going to reset to lower feed prices, but they're really cautious. They're really watching this 2015 crop, realizing that surpluses of crops aren't so large that, again, if we get a major setback in a major growing area of the world, we could push those prices up again, and the livestock industry is certainly very concerned about that. So as we think about where we're at for the animal industry, a long period of 6-7 years of decrease, that's going the wrong way for feed consumption. But what we turned the corner essentially in 2014 and are rebuilding now that usage base. We are rebuilding animal numbers. We are going to be in a what we've called a mini boom, not a boom, but a mini boom of multi-years of expansion. And I think that expansion will take us on out to about the end of this decade or maybe the very early part of next decade. So this is the base we need for our crop production. This is going to help restore and find that equilibrium. And one of the things that I think we know in American agriculture is that having some balance between the crop sector and the animal sector in the long run is a positive thing. Well, let me see if you have any questions. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. And somebody's got their hand up already. I'm in trouble. I didn't talk long enough. Okay, so obviously what we see in the domestic market is what are the opportunities for growth for the animal sector? First, you start with population growth in the U.S. Again, we have another mouth to feed. That means they'll roughly eat the same amount of animal products. So, you know, we're roughly 1%. That's not very helpful. We're going to go through, we think, the next, say, 3 years where we're going to be regaining some of that 20 pounds of lost per capita consumption. So we may be able to pick up something in the range of 1% to 2% a year there in terms of need for higher production. But really the growth market is in the export sector. So we're exporting approaching 25% of our pork. We're up in the low 20s in terms of broiler exports. We're about 10% in beef exports. So the real growth market is the foreign market. Now, we've hit kind of a snag here early in the year. Export estimates for our meat products, we've had to reduce those. And again, you think, why is that? Slowdown of economic growth in China is clearly one of those factors we're looking at. A fairly flat economic growth in Europe and Japan, and then the strength of the U.S. dollar. So while that is cutting into our ability to export our grains, it's also cutting in and having us lower our anticipation in terms of overall exports. But the growth side of our business, I think, is really more in the export side of the business. We're now exporting more broilers, chicken, pork, and beef than we export corn in terms of percent of production now. So what we've done is we've kept more of these grains, distillers' grains included, here on U.S. farms, and we have exported the value-added product. That's great economic development in our rural communities. We keep more of the grain and feed supplies here in our Midwest location. We increase the value of that basic grain or distiller's grains or soybean meal by producing animals and then exporting that to the rest of the world, generating processing returns as well. So, again, we've hit kind of a slow patch right now, but we think in the long run, continued economic growth in the developing world and dietary transition, as developing countries get more income, they not only want more food, they have the dietary transition from fewer amount of grain consumption to more meat, milk, and egg consumption.